everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm Lacey Bogger-Milas, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as per usual, is my co-host and partner in crime, Miss Nanny Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I was just talking about this before we started recording, but I'm super excited that I think maybe I will get through an episode this week without my cats running headfirst into the door demanding lunch the way they have the past couple of weeks. We're trying a new thing where I feed Baker and Hammer before we start recording because I can't, like, my life is run by tiny six-month-old tyrant kittens, and that's what I got.
Yeah, I kind of understand that.
Yeah, I'm really, like, they're very manipulative, and it's not fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's adorable, but also it's mean.
About 6 months is when Max first, like, started to really kind of misbehave for a while. Right now we're in the teenage cat phase. So there's a lot of get down from there. Get out of the sink. Get down.
Hammersmith likes to jump up in front of the TV to really, like, experience whatever we're watching. And I mean, that's fine, but he weighs almost 9 pounds now, so he's pretty large, and he often blocks the television, so it's a problem.
So what are we talking about today, speaking of television?
We are talking about today, not my cats for the whole episode, although I really could.
It's okay.
I forgot how all-consuming being a cat lady is. Those brain parasites they put in your head are no joke. But we're going to come back to, I think, one of our favorite shows from the past few months, Miss Scarlet and the Duke.
Yay!
Sadly, Rachel New is not with us this week, which, hi, Rachel. We miss you. Maybe later.
So, basically, we've reached the end of I guess what one could consider sort of the winter season of PBS. And this past weekend was the finales of everything. And I guess next week we'll come back to All Creatures to talk about
talk about animals, but that's next week.
But this week we're talking about the end of Miss Scarlet. And when the show premiered and Rachel New came on, you know, we kind of talked about the show, but we really sort of stuck to the first four episodes when we talked about it. And honestly, I think that was a very natural, because of the way the show flowed, that was a very natural sort of breaking point. Because I feel like if you sort of look at the season as a whole, that there's sort of the first four episodes and then there's that final two-parter of a finale. And that it's sort of, and that there really is kind of a natural change between those two. And that the first four episodes really sort of focus, you know, in a way that most shows about, you know, female detectives moving into male spaces, you know, really focused in and took its time with Eliza having to sort of explore what it is she's trying to do here.
I would actually even say that I think that is still a thread that goes through the last two episodes. I expect it will be a thread that goes through the whole show writ large. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I love the most about the show is that they don't, like, it's not suddenly just easy for Eliza. Like, she doesn't have her one episode where she has to, like, struggle or stand up to misogyny. Like, it's every episode.
Yeah.
Like, even the final sort of denouement of you find out who was responsible for her dad getting killed, it's still, like, a big part of that is that he really resents her for being a lady detective.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's really, like, it's infuriating, but also I think importantly realistic in a way that shows like this are not often choosing to do.
Yeah, and I think that's partly because, you know, one of the things about mysteries is they're supposed to be comforting. Like, this is comfort food. You know, it's very much a, you know, order out of chaos. You know, if your world feels like chaos, you sit down for one and watch, you know, any kind of mystery from Law and Order to Miss Scarlet to Sherlock to Poirot, and, you know, order is formed out of chaos happens, someone dies and they solve it and the bad guy goes away and we all feel better about it by the end. And one of the things Miss Scarlet kind of doesn't really do is let you be comfortable.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree with that.
You know, and you know, especially something like sexism, you know, it, you know, this is a difficult place for us to draw, because, you know, it's been 130 years since The Scarlet and the Duke was set. We're supposed to have moved on by now. And yet so many of the things that she, you know, some of the stuff that she basically is confronted with is like the very early, like, just absolute wall of the patriarchy. But a lot of it is still really relevant today for women in any workplace. And it sort of reminds you that we actually haven't moved on that far in over a century. And that can feel very frustrating, and that can feel in a way discouraging if it's put in your face too much. And I feel like one of the things Miss Scarlet really does well is balance that, like, not let us forget, not let us get comfortable.
I think you're supposed to be pissed.
Yeah, I do,
like,
too.
I really, like, am infuriated a lot, like, not at the, and I should be clear that I'm not mad at the show. I think the show tells good stories in a good way. I am infuriated at the situation that Eliza keeps finding herself in, where no one takes her seriously or respects her, and she has to work so much harder. You know that old saying about, what is it, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, where she had to do everything he
backwards
did, but she did
heels.
It backwards in heels?
Yeah.
Like, she's doing it backwards in heels every episode, and I get so angry, like, but for her.
Yeah.
Like, in her, sort of like in defense of her, because it's so frustrating to watch her not to watch so many men, let's just say men, not see what I see in her.
But also, you know, I think one of the strongest episodes, and it was for me the most frustrating, I literally had to stop watching it twice to get through it, was episode 3, when she runs into the sexism of women and the internalized misogyny of women.
Yeah.
And that was intense. There's a scene where she has to question the secondary, basically she's put in a situation where she goes undercover at a suffragette meeting, and then the head of the suffragette meeting is wanted for murder, and so she has to, you know, basically interview the other women in the group to get information. And she's literally sitting there with a woman who claims to be a suffragette, who claims to want equality, and who basically is like, I want to talk to a real detective, right? And it's just like, are you serious right now? And yet there it is. It's right there, right in front of her. And she can't, like, you know, the policeman who's in the room is laughing at her, and the woman is laughing at her. And she literally has this just, it is explosively frustrating, because literally no one is on her side.
I actually think it's important to note that that often even extends to the Duke himself.
Oh, yes,
like,
absolutely.
And he is the person who ostensibly, like, knows her the best, and yet he still sometimes struggles to see the, like, scope of her ability.
He's still throwing her in jail to keep her safe in the finale.
I know. I realize, like, from an objective perspective, that that is a bad thing, and it's one of those things that I hate that characters do when they do thing X to protect person Y from thing Z. But I also just love how he keeps throwing her in jail. Like, I just did, like, I love it. I think it's like, that was when I first decided that I shipped them, when he kept doing it in, like, the first episode, and or the first two episodes, I think. But actually, he's done it a lot, so maybe over the course of the whole show, I don't know. But, like, because she doesn't need protecting simply because she's, you know, a woman and
yeah,
possibly, like, less able to throw a punch than he is.
Yeah.
But, like, it's really, it's interesting that, like, he is not, I think a lot of shows default to, like, making the potential love interest, like, the special snowflake who is somehow, like, not
sexist the way the others
not
are.
Not impacted by the same sort of societal trends that, like, other characters are. Like, oh, no, he's a nice guy, or he's a good guy, or whatever. Like, I love that they are, like, he is just also a man who is a product of the time that he lives in. And even though he knows and has seen how capable and incredible she is, like, he still has these moments where he is caught up in the same sort of bad habits. I think that's actually really important.
Yeah. I also happen to love, and the irony is that one of the very few episodes where he doesn't throw her in prison, which is episode 5, she accidentally gets locked into prison and he has to break her out.
Maybe she just loves jail. I don't know. People are allowed to have weird, like, you know, hobbies.
um, but the thing is I really feel like these last two episodes are sort of different from the rest. And I don't know if maybe I'm the only one who thinks this, but there's something about the way that she and the Duke are so much more like they really sort of have a sort of partnership in these last two episodes that I feel like they don't quite have in the first four. I feel like for the first time, Duke isn't trying to use her. Which is one of the things that really bothered me in the early episodes, is that Duke is basically trying to sort of keep her on the down low and not let people know that she's the one solving the crimes and he's the one taking credit for it.
I had an interesting sort of mental argument with myself. This happens a lot. Don't judge me.
Okay.
About why I think that is, because I think that's true. And I'm like, part of me is like, well, that's just growth. Like, that's him growing as somebody who... you know, has seen her do the work and seen her do the work well. And he's just like, okay, she's really serious about this and she's good at it, et cetera, et cetera. Or if I think it's him just, I don't know if it's, I think it's growth in terms of how he sees her or growth in terms of how he sees himself, because I think it's also a choice that he decides not to do that, that he decides to give her credit, that he doesn't like the person
that he is by doing that.
He doesn't like the version of himself that takes credit for the things he knows he didn't do. And I don't know if that's just like personal growth for the Duke or if it's in part because he can set himself against his like truly obnoxiously horrible boss who is clear. Like, I mean, that's one of the few, that character whose name I
Sterling.
Really have blocked out because he's horrible, but is one of the few really this show's not a show that does a lot of caricature sort of feeling characters.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like the only character that felt kind of like
a caricature.
It was like too signposted about how misogynistic he was and how evil he is.
And yeah.
It felt a little mustache twirly for me, but maybe it stood out more because it's the only place in the show that it really does it.
It also makes him very much the easy red herring in our final episode, because the show has sort of built him into, oh, well, of course it's going to be that guy because he's the mustache twirly guy. And then it's not him. And I feel that that's actually also deliberate on the part of the show to sort of make him very mustache twirly, so that when the show suggests that he is the main antagonist who is running the counterfeit ring, we immediately buy that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really necessary. Honestly, the other thing about episodes 5 and 6 and the reason that I sort of feel like they set off is that episode 1 begins when Eliza's father doesn't come home. And, you know, whatever she's been doing, like running around doing her investigative stuff, the first real plot point is she goes to Duke and says, my father's missing. And he didn't come home. And Duke basically is like, no, write that off. No. He doesn't say to her, no, he's just out drunk, honey. But he basically says that. And she basically kind of admits to herself silently, yes, probably. And then he comes home dead. Episode 5 opens with Ivy coming in and literally the same scene beginning to play out, mm-hmm. except this time it's Eliza who didn't come home. And Duke really wants to write it off in the same way, but it's such a similarity that it almost feels like the show is starting over again. And I think that's the reason also why 5 and 6 don't sort of feel separated off from 1 through 4, like 1 through 4 are one story and 5 and 6 are one story, because they both begin they begin as an echo of each other.
Yeah, I see the echo argument. I don't think I draw as bright of a line of demarcation between 3 and 4 and 5 as you do.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's interesting to note that while clearly like everything in this show is connected, the last two are the only true two-parter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Which I think does tend to support your argument of like they should be taken together. They should be taken as their own thing. I just don't think we're meant to sort of view them as being completely separate from what came before.
Okay, I can see that. I also just absolutely love 5 and 6 because it's also when Rupert finally sort of like settles down and decides what he's going to do with himself and goes off to start.
Can we talk about how I thought his German lady friend was definitely some sort of like murderous spy?
No!
Because I was convinced.
What? Oh my my God.
I thought that she was definitely like some kind of secret agent or playing him when he goes on about how like her accent changed and she I fully believe she was somehow going to be the villain of the piece for a good like chunk of those last two episodes. Cause I was like, wow, suddenly she's not as into him and her accent's gone. And, you know, like I clearly wrong, but it would have been fun.
I have to say that like when you finally see who Tilly is in episode 6, like, and that she's basically going to grow up to be a Mrs. Parker, just like Rupert's mother, like everything about that scene is just, I love it so much. Like, it's one of like my favorite, like there are a lot of character building moments in these last two episodes too that I feel like really sort of also, as you say, like the fact that they are a two-parter does sort of set them apart, but I also feel like there's so much character building work that because this is a two-part episode that there's space for, that there wasn't space
like, because they don't feel like they have to have the answer to the thing by the end of the hour.
Right. So you get like, say, the egg boiling scene. Because you spend, we spend like a good 5 minutes in the kitchen with Duke and Eliza teaching her to like, where she fails to cook dinner and then he teaches her to boil an egg. Like that's a really, like that's, you know, in a show that is where each episode is 44 minutes, spending a good 5 minutes doing that is not what most mysteries do. Like you can't imagine, say, like Vander Valk spending 5 minutes boiling an egg. I mean,
although really the real mystery is how she messed up the second set of eggs so badly. Like, it really, I don't like boiled eggs, but it takes like 5 minutes. Like, anyway, part of me is a little annoyed by like the, let's show how non-feminine she is by like making her a super bad cook. It feels a little fanficky to me, but their scene in the kitchen was really cute. So I'll get over it.
As someone who grew up with a mom who could not cook, I can tell you exactly how you screw up eggs. Yes, it's possible, and I've seen it many times.
I mean, I'm a novice cook on my best day, but again, it's more of the like, that's such a trope to show how she's not like other girls, which I'm just like, oh, whatever.
I absolutely agree that it is very tropey, but at the same time, like I've been there. I know that one. Yeah. Anyway, I really felt like with all that character building, it actually sort of made the Frank thing come out of nowhere, because I felt like in the same way we were building with Eliza and Duke, like him and Duke going out and getting drunk and having beers and Frank talking about it, his wife and stuff. Like, I have to say, like, everything the show did to hide the fact that Frank was the big bad of the piece really worked for me, because
I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah,
probably because I had that complete misread on Rupert's girlfriend, but I was very surprised, because it is a, I hate that I think about things this way, but I do, and it is just a reminder at how good some men are at compartmentalizing, or really just like hiding how much they hate women. And I really thought that he, if not liked Eliza, at least respected her.
Or accepted that she was a thing he could not do anything about.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, look at your closet misogyny, sir. Dang.
Yeah. You know, and also, I think it's because there was just so many deaths that it sort of felt kind of shocking that it was this guy. The bodies really do start to pile up, like at the beginning of the final episode. You know, it's not just Henry anymore, like and Nathaniel, but there's also like those two other dudes who were shot, Harwood and Garm. And
oh yeah,
like there's a real like body trail at that point, and like, you know, so you sort of, Frank doesn't, because he's sort of this sort of jovial kind of like, he's the bag man. Like, you don't think of the bag man as the kind who can go out there and like, you know, put on a leather mask and start murdering. And yet he, right?
Can I talk about his unfortunate costume choice for a second?
Good Lord.
I know that all of you know that I am a Doctor Who person. And like, literally, I could not stop like just saying, "Are you my mommy?" every time he came out, because it just looks straight. It looks straight like he was from The Empty Child.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Like, once you see it, you like can't not see
And I have to say, like, when we first watched all these episodes at the in January, there was something else that also had a bad guy where they were wearing the gas mask. And I just was like, what is it with bad guys and gas masks? I mean, seriously, can we just not? At the same time, like, if it hadn't been Frank, I don't know how there was no one else at that point. I mean, because it obviously
Rupert's girlfriend. Hello.
I mean, honestly, like, you know, for all that Frank tries to
very
like
here for the whole like I built this whole like thing in my head where she was like this like ace lady of crime. And I was like really ready for it. Like she was trying to marry Rupert first. But I don't know. I should write fanfic.
You should really write fanfic. You know, because, you know, the one thing that like does sort of track once you realize it's Frank is that he's the one who's been pointing the finger at Moses this whole way. And
well,
you know,
let's talk about Moses for a
second. I love Moses. Like he's one
I do too. I really appreciate how that character went in a really unexpected direction.
Yeah.
Me.
I honestly think like the whole little setup of like not just him but the padre who came back from episode one in the final episode, the urchin, like, you know, she does have this whole little underground posse that she's sort of semi-built here.
It's very like Baker Street Irregulars for me.
Yeah,
like
I can see that.
The little sort of gang that Sherlock Holmes has that provides him with dirt.
Yeah, and you know, Moses does cut like a threatening figure. Like you believe that he could totally like, you know, murder somebody easily, you know, if necessary.
I also have to wonder how much the show is counting on us to think about that. Like it's leaning into sort of like the assumptions because he's literally like the only black character on the show.
Oh, absolutely. In the same way that it builds up Sterling.
Put a pin in that to ask Rachel the next time we can get her on the show because I would love to know more about this. I think it's a really deliberate, interesting choice. And it makes you as a viewer very complicit in a way that my weird theory about German spy lady does not.
It's also like both Moses and Sterling are given hallmarks that a white female viewer is sort of trained to accept or assume or allow themselves to assume, and it makes you very uncomfortable because you don't want to think of yourself that way. But I really felt like that is supposed to, yes, I absolutely believe that that the way they set up Moses is the same way they set up Sterling, to sort of play with those expectations and play with you to make you uncomfortable the same way that Miss Scarlet, you know, the early episodes of Miss Scarlet make you uncomfortable by not allowing her to just have it easy.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because I had seen some criticism of the show early in its run about the way that it was, because it was, you know, it aired on the same night as The Long Song. And,
yes.
And there was a lot of sort of discussion around race and there's been a lot of discussion recently about race in period dramas. And I know a lot of people were sort of concerned about the way that Moses was getting portrayed in the earlier episodes of the show and whether or not we were meant to like eventually find him villainous or whatever. I think it's just such a really smart, it's ultimately handled so smartly.
Yes.
And in a way that I really hope answered a lot of those people's fears.
And you know, it also sort of puts the Duke in his place in a way that the show doesn't allow to happen on a regular basis, and that's partly because, you know, he is a white male, so he doesn't have to be put in his place. Eliza tries very hard a lot of the time, but there's only so much she can do. And in this, there's sort of a no, really, dude, you were wrong. Sit down, have all the seats. And I feel like that was also very satisfying in a way. As you know, sort of a wrap up to sort of see like Duke have to sort of like step back, and sort of, you know, sort of really sort of reconsider like his prejudices in a way. You know, even though like, you know, and then of course, and then they go out to dinner and everything's happy.
They go out to dinner. I love them. Sorry, those are like that is like a particular like romantic trope pairing that is just like aimed directly at me, and I ship it and I love them.
You know, it's funny because, you know, I am so on the fence on whether or not I ship them, because there's part of me that really never wants these two to get together, like, at all.
I mean, I suspect you're not alone in that. And on some, on like a on paper level, I can fully agree with that, because I think too often in stories like this, the solution is to just put the two leads together rather than force them to sort of prickly, uncomfortably navigate their relationship and whatever is between them instead of just putting them together. But also, reader, I love them. So
yeah.
I'm torn. Actually, I'm not torn at all. I love them.
Yeah, it's sort of like, in a way, like, you know, Miss Fisher and Jack sort of held this for three seasons. But once they did a movie, like, the two got together and that was that. And I feel like Miss Scarlet, like, I don't want to have that Miss Fisher Jack thing going, though. I really want them to be far more equal than I think a romance could allow, because I feel like Duke's assumptions, everything the show has given us about Duke's assumptions about women.
I mean, they do kind of address this directly when he says, I forget, it's in one of the last two episodes. I can't remember if it's when they're stuck in jail together or afterwards, but he's basically saying that part of the reason he doesn't want to, like, talk her up to his colleagues is the fact that he thinks she's going to do what women do, which is go get married and have babies.
Yeah, that's when she's still locked in jail and he's trying to let her out, and they end up having a fight over it and he leaves her there.
And I think that's actually an important, you know, scene to have, in the sense that, like, that is what women do.
Yeah, and he really does think that, he really doesn't believe that she won't. He thinks that, like, everyone falls in love, and this is what happens when you fall in love. He will one day fall in love, and whatever woman he falls in love with will be his wife and cook him eggs and clean his house. And it'll happen to Eliza too, and she'll, you know, magically start learning how to cook eggs. When that won't, you know, when she's just like, no, that's really not who I am. And even if I did fall in love, I would not start cooking eggs. And he can't wrap his mind around that as a reality, like, because, and this is also another thing that I feel like the egg cooking scene sort of hits on, is the class difference, because Eliza has never had to cook her own eggs ever.
I actually remember thinking something about that when it happened, but did not remember it until you just said it.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a level where Eliza's class has let her imagine living a life where she never actually washes clothes, where she never actually makes dinner, where she never, because she's always going to have some kind of servant to do it for her. And whereas Duke, when he marries, there's not going to be an Ivy to cook for them. The wife will be doing it, because that's what wives did. That was their place. That was their role. That was their sphere. And there's a level where he doesn't understand that she doesn't see that as her sphere, and never sees that as her sphere. That's at best that will always be someone else, some other woman's sphere, not hers. And that even if she did get married, it wouldn't become her sphere. They would simply bring in a woman who would do it for them, or that her husband would do it. But no, of course not. Her husband wouldn't do it, because she wouldn't marry someone who would do that. So there's, you know, I feel like there's so much complexity to, like, scenes like the egg cooking scene that it's packed into 5 minutes, right? And yet, like, you know, these last two episodes really did have so much of that kind of thing, like, working underneath that, you know, I don't know. That's one of the reasons why I genuinely love this show in a way that, like, I'll never love Vander Valk. Like, I do like Vander Valk a lot. I had a lot of fun with it, but, like, this one.
I like the guy who hit people with a frying pan. He was awesome.
But, like, this is working on so many more levels.
I know, really. Like, let's comment on how odd it is that I love this show. Like, this is like a Venn diagram of things that I love, and there's also, like, some mystery stuff, but it's really, like, fourth tier to everything else that's happening. Or maybe it's also that the show is so good about making, like, the mysteries aren't just, like, this sort of siloed thing that's happening. They're very immediate to the lives of the characters, as opposed to being, like, character stuff is happening in this lane, and then lane B has this murder we have to solve. So,
I mean, a lot of them aren't really murders to have to solve, though. Like, yeah, in the end, like, you know, if we actually go through and look at, like, case by case, there's no murder in episode one. There is in episode two. Episode three, there's a murder, but it's really about a bomb plot. Episode four is literally a poison pen letters. Episode five is she gets locked in, accidentally gets locked in a jail cell and discovers a counterfeiting ring. Like, there are, as I said, there are bodies piled up by the time we get to episode six, which is kind of a shock in a way, because this hasn't been, you know, a murder mystery. It's almost like, oh, we kind of forgot to have murder mysteries in the first four out of five episodes, so here's a bunch of bodies. Right? Like, no, it does, though. And, like, honestly, though, like, yes, Henry was murdered in episode one and we didn't know it. But, like, honestly, like, I feel this show isn't about the murder of the week.
Yeah.
Like, it is a case of the week, but it's not violent like that, which is, I think, part of the reason why, like, I think that's also one of the reasons I like it. That it just, it isn't a shoot it up. There isn't blood everywhere all the time.
I remember the last time that we talked about this. You were on the fence about whether or not you even liked Duke.
It's true.
Like, how do you feel now?
I still am not sure how I feel about Duke, but, you know, upon rewatching and recapping every week, and really sort of thinking about this show in a much deeper way than you get when you just sort of bulk watch six episodes, you know, mainlined. Actually, one of the things that struck me is how much Eliza's world has settled by the end of episode six and how much Duke's is up in the air.
Well, because all the things he thought he believed in are turning out to be, like, not true.
And it's not even just that. It's also Sterling is dead. Frank is gone. Like, his whole little posse that he had, like, his you know, the man just above him and the man just below him are both gone now. You know, Eliza has basically, like, she has solidified her world, right? Like, she has Moses and Ivory working with her. She has Rupert and Tilly, who are going to be, like, the purse strings. And she's got Duke as kind of her semi-partner. You know, her world is set. Let's go to dinner. Duke's world is not set like that. We are going to get a new boss for him, Nick. You know, when a season two comes, we're going to get a new boss for him. He's going to have a new
Maybe he'll be the boss.
Or he'll have a new he's definitely going to have a new bagman, unless they promote Honeychurch, which would be interesting because I really like the fact that Honeychurch is kind of like a bobbling idiot. you know, if they promote him, then we're going to have a new, you know, like, PC, you know, standing on the street corners doing bobbling idiot stuff. Like, it's really going to be like, you know, his world is really going to be very different when we come back to this show, whereas Eliza's is very much set by the end of it. And I think that also,
I hadn't thought of it quite in that way, but I think you're really correct. It's sort of a lot of the same things that a whole lot of shows like this sort of do in the first episode. Like, you know, by the end of the first episode, like, the Scooby Gang is formed into whatever roles they're going to have for, like, the rest of the show and the rest of the season and whatever, whatever.
Whereas it took Eliza the entire season to get there.
Yeah. And I don't feel... And even though I feel like we can slot some people into those sort of, like, predetermined spaces, it's not nearly the same thing.
Right. And I feel like it almost makes me wonder if season two will be all about Duke finding his world and settling his world now that Eliza has sort of settled hers. And, you know,
together.
And that sort of makes me...
Sorry, I
You're
am
like a living Tumblr. Oh my god.
I am. I have saved GIFs. I'm ready.
Oh my gosh.
I was actually gonna say something meaningful there, but I don't remember what it was. So continue.
By the way, the only GIFs I have saved are her dresses, because oh my god, I love every single thing Eliza wears in this show.
I also really love that she wears the same thing.
Yes, that's true. I was very mad I couldn't find a good still of her in that final red dress for my recap. So I'm sorry there isn't a picture of that in the recap, because it's one of my favorite dresses that she wears. Anyway, you know, random. As I was saying, it's not that I'm not sold on Duke. It's that I feel like now, having watched the show much more closely, that I have now been set up to learn to like Duke. That the show didn't need me to like Duke yet, but that it's going to sell me on him next season. It has now set that up properly.
Ooh. Together. I'm really like, it's ridiculous. I need to find out if there's fan fiction for this show.
I'm sure there is. Let's ask the Scarleteers on Twitter.
Oh, I know. You guys send me, guys, the Scarleteers, if you're listening to this, like, send me your links. I will talk about them. So season two
has not been formally announced.
But I trust Rachel.
And when asked about it at the Television Critics Association panel, the head of PBS said that she could not at this time actually reveal anything, but that an announcement would be coming soon. So, you know, I'm hoping that means in the next few weeks.
I also feel like Rachel told us that season two is happening.
Well,
so
the thing is that
that's
like,
what I'm going with.
She basically did say that season two is happening, but that's happening on Alibi, definitely not necessarily over here.
Okay,
we don't.
That's fair.
Yeah. So PBS making an announcement would hopefully be that yes, they are picking up the second season and bringing it over here from Alibi.
I hope so.
Me too.
What was I going to say? Season two. What do you want to see in season two?
I want to see more of Eliza. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I want to see Eliza struggle more. I want to see how...
You're like, punish her.
No, but like, I want the show not to take it easy on me.
No, I think that's actually something that really does set it apart from a lot of series, is that it doesn't make it easy for her. So I think you're going to get your wish there.
I also want to see Ivy learn to read and write.
Aww. I forgot about that.
I have not, because it's also another moment that this show did that really sort of like set it apart for me, is reminding us that people like Ivy were not taught to read and write, and that there's a level where Ivy can't move up because she was never given the tools, and that Eliza, you know, Eliza may have class issues and may always sort of think of herself in upper class terms in a privileged way that she can never shake. And she may, as the bomber lady says to her, she may be, you know, allowing men to use her so that she can do what she wants. But that she's also gonna, she's sending the ladder back down.
Oh, I love that. I love that imagery of sending the ladder back down for other women.
Yeah, and when she sits down with Ivy and starts teaching her to read and write, she's sending that ladder back down. She's not going to be the only one to climb up. And I want more of that. I want to see Ivy climb. I want more Tilly. I want to see Tilly versus Mrs. Parker. I would like Mrs. Parker versus Mrs. Parker, please.
With her secret spy ninja skills that I have in my head given her. My fanfic is going to be so good, y'all.
And poor Rupert, you know, cowering between them. Yeah, those are the things I want.
I mean, I think we all know what I want in season two.
Together.
But they're probably like, I'm never going to get that until the show's like ending. So it's going to have to be a while. But I am hoping that we get a little bit more of them directly choosing to work together as opposed to
being thrown together.
Yeah, it's being some sort of something that like happens around them, because I think they are really good outside of the together part. They are really good partners. Like they really balance each other out well in terms of the work that they do. So I hope that we get more of that. And that leads to the together part. But yeah, I agree with you. I think seeing Eliza have to work for it is a real positive thing about the show. Like, it's a real, it's not good that she has to suffer, but like it's a good thing for the show that like it commits to the fact that like if we're gonna have the first Victorian lady detective, like it's not all hearts and flowers. It's never easy for the person who goes first. And I mean, I think we've seen that constantly in throughout history, both immediate and not so immediate, that it is really hard to be the woman that goes first. Like, maybe there'll be somebody who looks up to her and wants to follow in her footsteps, but like she has to hew through it herself with no one there to show her how to do it. So I mean, I think that's important. I think that's an important thing for her character. So yeah. Oh, are we I think we're probably running up on time.
Yes.
I really I really like this show.
I know. I'm so glad we had a mystery you like.
I know. It's so rare.
I will look back on this fondly when we have to do, I don't know, Endeavor season 9.
Vandervalk season 2. No, really, it was Endeavor that I disliked the most, I think. So, but I don't think that's going to come back this year, so I'll probably be safe.
There are rumors that it may come like late fall.
I don't even think they've started filming yet. Like, because I think the people that were in it, like, were in other things that were delayed. So they have to finish the delayed things first before they can start Endeavor. So we'll see. Who knows? This production schedule is wild in 2021.
Gosh. The only mystery that I am absolutely certain is coming back this year that we're going to get in the fall is Unforgotten. And that's because we know they're filming and they have been since, I believe, like November.
I think it's actually going to air in the UK sometime in the next month, if I recall correctly.
And if we follow sort of the about 6 months later, we should get it mid-fall. So fingers crossed, because I really want to introduce you to that show. So
that feels like a threat.
I have hopes.
Okay. Oh, well, this one, you know, Miss Scarlet and the Duke. I loved it. Although it does really, like, I thought I would probably like it. It feels like it has enough of my Venn diagram of interest to make up for the mystery angle, which it did. Hooray.
I feel like somebody looked at our podcast and said, oh, God, let's just make a show that the two of them like at the same time, for God's sakes.
Like, let's just throw Lacey a bone here. Yeah. Anyway, season 2, I can't wait till it's, like, official, and I can't wait to see it, and I'm so glad that this seems to be doing well and that people like it. Hooray.
Hooray.
Annie, tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me at Annie Bundle on Twitter. You can find me at Miss Annie Bundle on Facebook. You can find my cat at Annie Bundle on Instagram. And yeah, I'm a staff writer at Elite Daily, and I write a lot for televisions.org, and I also freelance around the web. So if you want to, like, find the things I've been writing, please just go to my Twitter and, like, follow me, because I basically retweet all my bylines. Okay. Thanks.
That was cute. Thanks. I am Lacey MB on Twitter. That's LACYMB. And I also write a lot here at Televisions and around the entertainment web, but I always tweet my bylines, so that is the easiest place to keep up with me, anything I'm doing, how bored I am by quarantine, cat photos. But if you just want the cat photos, Baker Lou and Hammersmith are on Insta at Baker and Hammer. And for everyone that's curious, they are currently pawing at the door. So my grand plan of keeping them away while we're recording, sorry about the banging in the background, Mark. The site and the pod are also on social media. We are at Tele_Visions on Twitter and Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook. We are a product of WETA. And so if you like what Televisions is doing, you can visit us at televisions.org and click on the donate button up top to help us keep doing it and support public media at the same time. It is a win-win for everyone. That is our show for this week. Again, I am hoping that 2021 will let up on us eventually. Stay safe. Take care of each other. Help your elderly or vulnerable relatives work out how to get vaccine appointments. And if you're in any of the states that have been impacted by this truly horrific winter weather, we are sending you good thoughts and warm thoughts. Specifically, this is, I'm tired of it. We've gotten a lot of ice here in our area, which is, you know, certainly not as lingering as snow, but I also haven't left my house in 4 days.
I skated around my back patio.
Oh, like on purpose or by accident?
No, in my slippers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't have a back patio. We live on the 6th floor, and I'm just like, I'm not going outside. So I haven't gone outside. It looks like it's still there. The cats have been really interested in this lead. Anyway, that is another tangent that no one probably asked for. So I will say thank you, as always, for listening, and we will see you next week.